The views and opinions expressed by A Little Bit Culty are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the podcast. Any content provided by our guests, bloggers, sponsors, or authors are of their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, group, club, organization, business, individual, anyone, or anything. Welcome to A Little Bit Culty, a podcast about what happens when something that seems like a great thing at first goes to the dark side and takes you with it. I'm your host, Sarah Edmondson.
And I'm also your host, Anthony Ames, a.k.a. Nippy. Sarah and I met, fell in love in a, quote, self-help organization that turned out to be a mega cult called Nexium. Heard of it? We got out of there together, and on our way out, we helped shut it down. Our journey as Nexium whistleblowers was captured in detail on a docuseries called The Vow on HBO, and also on the front page of a newspaper.
New York Times, babe.
Right.
Have you heard of it? Each week on A Little Bit Culty, we talk with other former cult members and whistleblowers, plus experts in things like cultic abuse and coercive control.
We also turn the mic over to advocates and clinicians with wisdom to share on recovering from everything from MLMs and toxic religion to bad romances with raging narcissists.
There's always something to learn about the cultiverse. Be sure to subscribe to A Little Bit Culty so you don't miss an episode. Find us on Instagram and at alittlebitculty.com.
Kick it off, Sarah. What do you got?
I got some juicy stuff today, babe.
Oh, yeah?
Got some real juicy things to talk about.
How juicy?
Really juicy. Before we get into that.
That's gross.
Before we get into it, I just have to say it's been really fun hearing everybody's suggestions for the listeners. We got decultaminated, cult averted, decultageous, the decults. A couple people also wrote in, and I think it's important to note that naming the listeners may be a bit culty. So I think we're just going to abandon this idea.
On.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be careful. Yeah, you got to be careful that we don't get culty on the other side of this, right?
Thanking our listeners and giving shout outs to them is cool.
No. Thanking them. We're just not going to name them. We were coming up with a name for the...
Okay.
Coffee's just kicking
in. I was never on board with that, really. That was more...
I don't know how we even started it. I blame Jess.
Yeah, Jess, this one's on you, sweetheart.
But Jess is also responsible for some amazing things, like really amazing things. The show notes.
Like the whole idea of our questions, of the podcast. The reason
the
we're
name of our
right
podcast,
now,
in case you're late to the party. Season. Jess Tardy came up with the title, A Little Bit Culty. And we owe her a lot. We owe her our lives and our happiness.
Yeah, we haven't met her in person yet.
When I meet Jess Tardy in person, I'm going to like tackle her to the ground. And I don't know what I'm going to do after that. Like, I might lick her face a little bit. I don't know. It's going to be wild. Yeah, I mean, I just love her so much. And it's just so weird to know somebody. Like, we probably talk 5 times a day. And I've never met her in person. So that's going to change, I think, when we're down south.
For sure, a fist bump.
For sure. Come on. Meet Jess for the first time and fist bump her. She's going to be like, fuck you, Nippy Ames. Get over here for some Jess Tardy loving. Anyway, Jess also writes a lot of our intros because that's not our forte. Anyway, so yeah, before we jump in, this is another preempt. This is a serious one. We need to give you the heads up that this show is created for adult audiences, and we advise listener discretion with this episode particularly because it includes a discussion of sexual assault, mental illness, and suicide. If you or someone you know is experiencing suicidal thoughts or a crisis, please reach out immediately to a licensed medical professional or take yourself to an emergency room. For real. We've put links to hotlines and resources in our show notes.
We don't normally preface our episodes, but we felt like this one needed one because of the person Teal Swan. One of my favorite episodes is our ones with Nadia Boltz Weber, and we asked her about these kinds of people. And my favorite line from her is when she said, "I assume they're all monsters until they prove otherwise," or something to that effect.
Yeah, there's the way that they talk, right?
Yeah, and the whole vibe. And this is someone who right away, because we've been looking at this and discussing it for quite some time, right away I recognized, I mean, I'll say it, I think she's a monster. And people are kind of dancing around that, but that's my professional
opinion of looking at this for as long as we have.
Okay, here's my shot at it. Teal Swan in a nutshell. A new agey guru and spiritual influencer who also happens to look a little bit like Xena Warrior Princess. If Xena had a thing for posting teachings that occasionally fixate on the darkest topics ever, self-harm, suicide, and necrophilia. And just so you know, when I said teachings, I made big air quotes around them with my fingers because most of what she says is actually very generic, like reheated chicken soup for the soul quotes and memes from Instagram. It's just hard to argue with, you know, just be yourself. But the stuff that isn't absurdly generic is pretty crazy.
Think of Jennifer Connelly, you know, put on a Stevie Nicks outfit and started recording videos.
Yeah, with like trippy backdrops. So we actually got an opportunity to watch a sneak preview of the Freeform docuseries about Teal Swan that just dropped.
It's very sneak, by the way.
It's called Deep End, and we'll link to it in the show notes. It's really good, but we're not going to lie, it's extremely disturbing, for real. I couldn't even sleep well after watching this. I made a mental note, I'm not going to watch the rest of it before going to bed. I literally was like confronting her and writing letters to her about why she's dangerous in my sleep throughout the entire night. So don't do what I did and maybe watch it during the day. But I'll put it in Teal terms. She seems to have some very dark vibes resonating in her energy field. I could see her aura and it's very dark. It's a little malevolent. We're actually going to be talking to John Casby, the director, and Bit Sola, the producer. They're the filmmaking team behind The Deep End in an upcoming episode. So stay tuned for that. And in that episode, we're going to be doing an even deeper dive into the making of that series.
She does a really good job of the online, or what I like to call the algorithm cult. And she has a slick content making machine behind her. Very provocative way of engaging. If you look at her YouTube videos, it seems kind of benign, but all the things are there where she stares into the camera and all the hypnotic things are there. She has a huge following of hundreds of thousands of people on YouTube. And she also seems to really believe that she has all the answers for anyone struggling with depression and suicidal thoughts. And she's very, what's the word, Sarah? I mean, I guess arrogant, but also like when she's challenged, she asserts her dominance. Just watch it and check it out. In her own words, according to the series we just watched, she's the most aware person on the planet. There's nobody wiser than her. And she says she's bigger than the Pope.
She's going to be bigger.
So I think she thinks she's already bigger than the Pope. It's just a matter of timing.
Basically, she's asserting that that's her goal, to be bigger than the Pope, right?
Fuck it. Why not?
Fuck it. Why not? Teal says she saves lives. Others say she's dangerously death-obsessed. Our opinion is that Teal Swan is giving us very strong Nine Perfect Strangers villain vibes, which is also a smidge of Night Terrors, but that's just us. So we wanted an expert opinion, which brings us to our guest today. Jennings Brown is a Brooklyn-based investigative journalist who's experienced the Teal Swan effect live and in person. As a senior reporter at Gizmodo, Jennings traveled to rural Utah, the forests of Costa Rica, and smack dab into the middle of Teal's inner circle to understand her teachings and to investigate the deaths of some of her followers. His unprecedented access to Teal's world is now at the heart of a 6-part podcast called The Gateway, which is crucial listening, and we'll link to it in our show notes.
Before Gizmodo, Jennings was an editor at Esquire magazine and Popular Mechanics magazine. And his work has appeared in New York Times Magazine, The Daily Beast, CNN, and Deadspin. He joins us today to talk about Teal Swan's controversies, the layers of the onion that his reporting has peeled away from that carefully curated Teal Swan image, and how spiritual hucksters are gaming the algorithm in order to manipulate people's most vulnerable moments. We also talked to him about his newest podcast project, the Spotify original Revelations, which follows a California cult that combines doomsday prophecies and fine wine. And we get so carried away that we go into extra innings here. So this is the first of 2 episodes with Jennings. Part 2 drops next week.
But let's be in the now, shall we? Teal's, well, she's a piece of work. Buckle up. Go listen to the Gateway Pod or check out some of the articles in our show notes before you listen to this episode if you feel like being extra creeped out. But do browse and listen safely. It's dark stuff. We warned you. So without further ado, here's our chat with Jennings Brown, who had unprecedented access to Teal Swan's culty, culty world. Enjoy.
Welcome, Jennings Brown.
Welcome. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I must be, I don't know, you tell me, it's a little bit weird to be on this end after being the asker of the questions, the reporter up till now? Or have you done a lot of these interviews?
I've done a few, but they always make me nervous. I'm definitely more comfortable being on the other side.
Where do you want to start here, Bitter?
I am a little curious how you got into this. Like, you're now this investigative reporter on cults.
I mean, it's certainly not my like only beat.
Of course.
I cover all sorts of things, but yeah, the stuff that seems to have gotten the most attention lately is on spiritual leaders and spiritual organizations and spiritual abuse and that sort of stuff. I'm fascinated by kind of strange communities and things on the fringe. So I guess I started reporting on kind of alternative communities and a lot of, especially in like before the 2016 election, I was doing a lot of like conspiracy communities and the, you know, right-wing extremism and spending a lot of time kind of exploring the dark corners of the internet. And that's sort of how I got into Thiel and started reporting on her, which I guess sort of shifted my whole career into focusing more on that kind of stuff. But I guess I could kind of talk about the origins of the Thiel Swan reporting if you'd like.
I would love that. And just before we do, is there anything in your background or childhood or religion or community-wise that was part of that fascination or just something that you got into because you were exposed to it?
I had a pretty, I guess, normal upbringing. I grew up in Dallas, Texas. I was raised in the United Methodist Church, but I was pretty active, did a lot of church choir and theater. I actually wanted to be a pastor when I grew up. And it just was like kind of my safe space. I didn't really fit in at school and I had a community there. And then as I went to college and got kind of more politically engaged and more aware of global affairs and stuff, the church I was raised in was the same church as George W. Bush. And, you know, there was kind of this sense that everything he was doing, he had God on his side. And then I realized that was the same sort of God I was raised under. So I sort of started questioning that. And then my youth minister was arrested with child porn. And
wow.
Just a lot of like things started to come out about the people that I respected in the church. And I realized there was kind of this sort of sacred veil they all had that I respected them. I think that kind of planted the seed of just sort of the fascination behind what spirituality and religion can kind of cover, you know, maybe more sinister things brewing underneath and people get a pass. And I just kind of liked the idea of peeking behind the curtain.
So you had a journey yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. But I've always been a seeker. I mean, even back then I was reading a lot of like books on sort of the occult and Buddhism and voodoo and different ideas. So I think those two sides collide is that when I reach out to spiritual communities and want to report on them, I'm genuinely very interested in their beliefs, their dogma. I want to understand. I mean, maybe I'm going to find some sort of tool or new dogma that will resonate with me. And I think people respond to that because I don't go into anything trying to, you know, expose. I'm just truly trying to understand both what they believe and the appeal and also just like maybe what they could be doing with their power and influence.
That was the thing that struck me most about your process is it didn't seem like you went into any of these things with an axe to grind per se and more curious, which I think allowed you to get in there, which was the most fascinating thing for me to see is like, how did you get in there and get so close? What do you think that you were doing that facilitated that?
You know, I reach out and I'm genuinely curious and I genuinely want to engage. And before I read a lot of the texts, I mean, the Fellowship of Friends is one organization I've done a lot of reporting on, and they're based on the Fourth Way. It's just kind of this esoteric teaching. And I've read a lot of the books from the founders of the Fourth Way, so I can engage on that level. I think that's the sort of work that a lot of people reporting on this sort of thing don't really do.
So you find that common ground.
Yeah, I connect with them about that. And then I tell them I'm also interested in the darker side, the shadow aspect. Also, I'll use the sort of language of the groups to show them I understand. And like, look, I'm going to explore all these things, but I'm coming into it with an open mind and I'm trying to meet you on your level. And so, yeah, I think people respond to that.
That's really impressive. I also, like Nippy, I think, I don't know, even just watching Thiel, I've never met her, obviously you have, but I think because a lot of her vernacular and way of speaking and what I perceive as arrogance and just even the sort of the therapeutic model reminds me a lot of my own experience. So it's hard for me not to have a disdain, an instant disdain.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Sarah and I were talking about this before. And granted, when I think a lot of people start to investigate or ask questions to these groups, a lot of people know exactly what they're looking at before they go into it. A lot of people have their own journey with going into it. And after 3 to 5 years of just asking questions, it's like, it's pretty evident to Sarah and I right away, like, okay, here's what it is. And we try to be devil's advocate with Thiel, like what works. And pretty consistently, and tell me if this is what you've come across, very seldom do the content points of what they're saying, are they really objectionable? It's normally the process of the leader that for me, and particularly in Teal's case, and I'll just take the gloves off here, I find the arrogance, her weakness, and her confidence is the thing that is ultimately going to be her downfall. Because I think that kind of blind ambition, and I've experienced in my life, just lends to many, many blind spots when you're pursuing. And the comment we just saw in one of the trailers about her being akin to the Pope. And that to me is, I'm tired of the term red flag. I mean, to me, that's, you should run.
It's a classic delusion of grandeur, right?
Yeah. And I'm wondering, was that your immediate response to her? Did you reserve judgment? How do you press on when you start to understand what you're looking at?
You said you think her arrogance will be her downfall. That kind of reminds me of a lot of the sort of arguments about how people thought that, you know, Trump wouldn't really become as powerful as he is within the Republican community. I think something that people really appreciate about her is her sort of confidence and brazenness. And people have asked me when The Gateway came out and now the documentary about her, are you going to look back like the producers of the Apprentice, who, you know, kind of gave him that platform? And I don't know if respect is the right word, but you can't help but sort of admire somebody who's just like their sheer confidence and boldness with this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. The sort of spiritual community, cult world, it tends to be a male-dominated industry. And here you have this woman who's just like, she's like, I don't give a fuck. Like, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm going to be bigger than the Pope. And I think that sort of confidence resonates with people. But yeah, I did have red flags when I first started reporting on Teal. Actually, Teal sort of came to me the way that it does for a lot of people is through YouTube. When I first discovered Teal, I was reporting on a lot of kind of conspiracy theories and consuming a lot of InfoWars and YouTube videos about like aliens and Planet X and all kind of these sort of alien-y conspiracy theories. And just out of like journalistic curiosity. But I think the sort of Google algorithms matched me with somebody who was interested in that kind of thing. This is the stuff we hear from a lot of people who got into Teal. They're like, I was looking into kind of conspiracy theories, like ancient alien type stuff. And she sort of fits into that nexus of conspiracy theories and mysticism.
We call it the cult of the algorithm.
Yes. And she's gained it really brilliantly, I think. But, you know, so at the time I was reporting on these things, I was dealing with a breakup and I was between jobs. And I think also just fit the profile of somebody who was spending a lot of time online and alone. And YouTube started recommending I watch these videos by this spiritual teacher. I ended up like looking back through my YouTube, you could see kind of every video that, you know, in your watch history. It was like a lot of InfoWars, conspiracy theory videos. And then I watched the theme song for MASH, which is Suicide is Painless. And then it was like, you might like a video from Teal Swan. And I clicked it. And I was just immediately transfixed because it was this beautiful woman who was looking deep into the screen, these kind of penetrating eyes, this swirly hypnotic background. Her voice was very droning. And you're like, what is this? It seems like something out of sci-fi and it's kind of hypnotic. And she starts talking, and she has topics about everything from like diet to cryptocurrency to darker topics like self-harm and suicide and necrophilia. A lot of times things will start very normal and just kind of new age self-help, law of attraction type stuff. And then it's droning on, you're getting sucked in, and then it just takes a turn for like, again, necrophilia or suicide. And so that immediately my spidey senses were tingling. I was like, I think there's a story here. I admired it. It was like this sort of spiritual influencer who wasn't afraid to talk about these darker topics.
She's also very upfront about how the YouTube and her online presence preps people for when she meets her. She doesn't have to win them over when she meets them. They're already won over by the time they do that.
At the time, I was a tech reporter. So I was reporting on it from that angle because I was really fascinated. It's a lot of topics that there aren't videos for because they're very taboo. And like, there's a period where if you typed in, I want to kill myself, the first video that popped up on YouTube was her video titled, I want to kill myself, parentheses, what to do if you're suicidal. It's already kind of like she's sort of gaming the algorithm by talking, having, and she has videos about everything. And so when people are, they've told me, they're like, I put a question in the universe and then, you know, YouTube sort of delivered this video. And then they kind of fall down the rabbit hole. They start watching her videos all night. I mean, people told me they just like, it was all they're watching. Yeah. So it's by the time they meet her, it's like, they truly have, they're like, it's beyond fandom. And I felt that too when I met her. Like, I'd been watching so many videos of her and to see her in the flesh.
I had that when I met Nancy also.
Oh, really?
Yep, because I'd seen her on video for so. I had what most people had for Keith, I had more with Nancy. And I really admired her and looked up at her and wanted to be like her. But when I first met her in person, I'd seen her on the videos, right? For 5 straight days in a row. And then I met her that next weekend. Wow. And so I was like, oh my God, Nancy. So yeah, I do get that. And I do find Teal to be quite calm and charismatic. And the confidence is definitely reassuring when you're into her. But from the outsider's point of view, I look at it and go, you know, especially with the allegations that she somehow maybe played a part in certain people's suicides. I mean, I think you really deal with well in Gateway, like the way that you explore that. I think it's really responsible. And I find her response very irresponsible, you know, in terms of like, if that was me, like she says she was upset, but more about what it meant about her, like not about the person who died. I found that quite shocking.
It wasn't the appropriate response to someone committing suicide. It seems like when most people, if you had any sort of link or causation to someone's death, that didn't look like the requisite empathy that would happen with most people. I did find when she was challenged, she got a little bit...
She kind of gaslit you.
Yeah.
Did you catch that, Jennings, listening back?
Yeah. So, I mean, I had two main interviews with her. The first one was at her compound, her healing center in Costa Rica, where a lot of her, it's like her intentional community, a lot of them were living at the time.
Kind of Nine Perfect Strangers-esque.
It honestly was very Nine Perfect Strangers-esque. I think Nine Perfect Strangers was a book before, but there were a lot of elements that weren't in the book that seemed straight out of Gateway. Gateway was like very surreal watching that, because when I arrived there, she immediately had everybody go through this like death meditation where they all imagine their death and we're sitting in a circle. And there's a moment in Nine Perfect Strangers where she has everybody bury their graves in a circle. And it was like, as somebody who'd seen that and then seeing it on film, it's very weird. But I spent like a week there, like getting to know her community and the people who'd spent thousands of dollars to go there for this retreat. And so I was even more kind of amped up. I've interviewed a lot of people that I respect, or like celebrities, but this was different. It was like these people really believed that she was some sort of deity or had some sort of power. So then by the time when I finally interviewed her there, you know, people are kind of pressed against the windows and watching. And I think a little jealous that I got so much time alone with her. She totally got in my head. I finished that interview and I thought I just like killed it. And then my producer was like, we can barely use that. She totally manipulated you, controlled you. And listening back, I was like, yep, she absolutely did.
She didn't answer your questions.
She never answered a direct question.
Yeah, I would ask something and then she would say something very shocking that made me feel very uncomfortable. It's like, you know, a man asking a woman very sensitive questions, which, you know, that was also a delicate issue with the podcast. But after that, yeah, I prepared and we had a final interview that I was much more prepared for. But yeah, even looking back, there was kind of this gaslighting, always kind of one-upping me. It felt like this chess game. I mean, it was unlike any interview I've ever done.
Yep, that's how it is with people when you try and pin them down.
I was so uncomfortable listening to it. Like, I have... Not so much anymore, but especially in the early days after leaving, like dreams where I'm having these conversations with ex-leaders or ex-members of NXIVM. Being out of it now and knowing what it looks like, I can see it and like fantasize about responding in a way that's like cut the gaslighting, you know, and be like, you're not answering my question. You're an arrogant fuck. Yeah. Go fuck yourself.
So Jennings, after that experience, what abuses of power do you think she's committing when she does that? Like, because that's the subtle kind of not so overt mechanisms they use.
Yeah. Well, first I want to respond to something Sarah just said. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a friend who got out of NXIVM.
We're going
to
call her Becca. Let's call her Becca.
Sure. Becca.
Okay.
We were friends. When the Gateway came out, she tried to listen to an episode and she was like, dude, I love you, but I can't listen to this. It's giving me Keith triggers. It's just like hearing an inner woman's voice. And so, you know, I applaud y'all for consuming as much content about this stuff, you know, related to your guests as you do, because I can imagine it's very triggering.
Jennings, to your point, and I think you talk about this as well, the abuses of power, and this is what we said almost in every episode, that go on inside of, say, a cult or whatever, are the same ones that go on in society. And we spoke to a woman yesterday that we're going to interview later about how narcissists do it and all that stuff.
To your point, it is triggering. At the same time, this podcast has become, it's our life now, so I'm kind of used to it. Sure. And if anything, it's just like, and here's another one, you know, and it's kind of the same shit, different pile,
same thing,
different voice, slightly different message. But I will say there is a lot of similarities, especially in the methodology, the completion process that Teal uses with her clients. It sounds a lot like an EM in terms of bringing up the feeling of, we even called it being triggered. You're triggered. You bring that feeling up. Through that feeling, you access a memory. That memory is usually some sort of early childhood trauma. We didn't use the word trauma so much in NXIVM, but it was like some incident that happened in childhood where you put together a meaning about how the world works or whatever that means about you. Usually like I'm unloved or I'm unsafe or I'm worthless or whatever. And we would then, what they called, fill in the missing information that you didn't have as a kid. So you could look at it in a different way, reintegrate it. And then the thing that normally triggers you is no longer a trigger because you don't carry that same wound. Exact same thing, which I later found out is sort of like different, and listen, I'm not a therapist, but like it's kind of psychology 101 to reframe your beliefs that you had as a kid. My concern is, I mean, she thinks she just downloaded this from the cloud, the
Akashic Records.
Akashic Records, yeah, of the universe. And this is, she got it that way. And listen, after this whole journey, I'm not opposed to certain what some people call woo-woo or energy. Like I, you know, I got some crystals. I do my smudging. I have angel cards, but like I wouldn't make major life decisions on those things. They're just sort of like accoutrements in my house. And I'm very skeptical. My main concern with her is like, she has no training.
Yeah.
That's a big problem.
Well, that's the abuse.
And there's people's psyches and major traumatic wounds in her hands, and they're going to her to resolve it. How do you think she justifies that?
You know, I try not to dismiss anybody's beliefs or claims of their powers, because I mean, certainly what I was raised in, I think if an alien looked down and looked at Teal and what she teaches and like what just basic Christians think, you know, that's like zombie Jesus rose from the dead, we eat his flesh, we drink his blood, like it sounds, you know. So I don't want to like say that she doesn't have any psychic abilities or, you know, that there isn't any truth to the things she's saying. Yeah, she's not trained in any kind of mental health capacity. She has had a lot of therapy, has read a lot of books of different spiritual teachings and consumed a lot of content around that. And I think it seems to me that, because there's a lot of like sort of parroting and accusations of plagiarism. So it seems to me that she does kind of pull from all these different teachings and kind of diagnose people. But that's where it gets really messy, is she uses terms straight from psychology, like straight diagnosing people with bipolar disorder or telling them, you know, I think you are passively suicidal. There are things from your past that I can tell, like, you know, saying their parents abused them sexually or like in these satanic rituals. That's where it gets really scary, is like, you know, the people who are in a very vulnerable position, very impressionable, you know, she's this sort of authority figure, power figure, you know, and they've paid to go to these events. So just the power balance is already off, and she's saying like she knows things about them and she's diagnosing them. And that's where it goes to a certain, yeah, where I think she's really playing with fire, because then that totally changes their identity. And then, you know, they find out with her that their parents abused them. And so they do this, what she calls like, it used to be the shadow work. Now, then it was completion process. I'm not sure if it's evolved beyond that. But people do this sort of completion process to try to remember what Teal has sort of said about them or diagnosed them with and help them process it. So then it becomes all the more real. I saw a very clear pattern, a lot of people who went to her. They found out things about themselves, like they found out their parents abused them in satanic rituals or like experiment on their body or things like that. And then they go and do this completion work and it becomes very real to them. And then it just ruins their family. There's many people who have had that exact trajectory where they're no longer around her family. And, you know, she is also kind of a mother figure to a lot of people. So the Teal tribe sort of becomes their new family. And so much of this is happening just online. And so she really has built this kind of model that we are somewhat familiar with and has put it on the internet. And the algorithms have just, it are totally boosted it. And, you know, it used to be just with YouTube, and now she's thriving with TikTok. And she's leaning more into kind of QAnon stuff and conspirituality, a lot of, you know, anti-vax stuff. She's very good at kind of evolving with sort of what's going on in the conspirituality world on the internet.
She's clever.
Yeah.
And look, she came on my radar around the time we did a podcast on Bentinho Massaro. And because he does a similar thing.
Yeah, they're very similar, I think.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was a coincidence that she came out with, you know, kind of a statement about people who are abusing things online, kind of warning people about people like him while she was doing the same thing. To your point, I think she's clever at anticipating what objections might be so she could get ahead of them.
Do you think that she was okay to let you in because she thought that you were going to validate her, or that she was trying to do that, I've got nothing to hide, come on in? What do you think was going on for her that you got so close?
With my approach, I came to her and I was like, you're clearly doing something. Like, I didn't understand the time. I knew that like she, a lot of people swore by what she did. I knew there was some controversy. I knew she was doing something very original. You know, I told her I was a tech reporter and I was also a seeker and I was fascinated with this sort of stuff. I wanted to understand how she was building this sort of spiritual empire through the internet. I think that resonated with her, and they invited me out. And, you know, even as like, you know, I kept sending them sort of fact check questions as the thing was coming to an end, and they just made it to the end.
Wow.
And, you know, she is not ashamed of anything she does. I think she also is sort of into the controversy. They used to have this very, very active Facebook group called, you know, the Teal Tribe, that's since been shut down, but it was just like people posting about suicide and posting her videos all the time. But it was like this community she built for people who like appreciated spirituality, but all of it was kind of too woo-woo and happy. And this was kind of like for people who had like a darker side. Mm-hmm. When it was active, if anybody posted the gateway or mentioned me or any kind of criticism, A, the settings were set so that you couldn't post anything about the gateway. So there's already kind of control of information online. Yeah, anybody who started posting sort of like questions about it, they were kicked out. There was this excommunication. I think there is a sort of control of information. They don't appreciate criticism. They call everybody a hater, but I think they sort of appreciate the controversy. It validates this idea that she's mm-hmm. doing something that, you know, the mainstream doesn't want.
Yeah.
Right.
She's this sort of fearless maverick.
They're right? not ready for.
Right. And Keith's version of that was whenever there was negative media, it was, well, of course, if you're trying to bring ethics to an unethical world, there's always going to be pushback.
Ugh.
We tell our stories. We change the world. A Little Bit Culty is proud to support the hashtag I Got Out project, which empowers survivors of cultic abuse to share their stories online as a catalyst for education, prevention, and healing. Learn more about the hashtag I Got Out movement and find resources at igotout.org.
What do you think people need to know about Teal? And do you think she's dangerous?
I think for some people, she can be very dangerous. The amount of people who reached out afterwards that thanked me for the podcast. And a lot of times it was like, it just helped my family understand like why I went through such a dark period and why I was alienated from mm-hmm. them. That's the benefit of to a lot of these sort of documentaries and stuff is, I mean, there's definitely, mm-hmm. I have a lot of issues with a lot of the sort of fascination with cult related documentaries and podcasts and stuff like that. And that's a whole other topic we'll get into. But I think for a lot of people, it does. I've heard from cult survivors who were like, it finally helped, you know, it's just the sort of thing that I couldn't explain to everybody. And then I have this podcast or documentary came out and it helped people understand what I went through and why I seemed crazy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think she can be dangerous because a lot of people have since told me that, you know, she affected them in very dark ways. And there have been people who were, you know, very connected to her or consuming a lot of her teachings who died by suicide. And that's not to say that she's to blame. I mean, a lot of therapists help patients with suicidal ideation, obviously, like have clients who died. In the beginning, I started focusing on the suicide because there was so much on her. I mean, people call her like the suicide catalyst because she calls herself a spiritual catalyst. And there's a lot of sort of ex-Teal people or people who are just like fascinated with Teal who are promoting this idea that Teal is like a suicide cult leader and she's pushing people to kill themselves. And I don't know. She's playing with fire. She's pulling in a lot of people who are isolated, depressed, having suicidal ideation. And she definitely, I mean, she romanticizes suicide. I mean, the video, the main suicide video that has since been taken down, titled, I Want to Kill Myself, What to Do If You're Suicidal, said suicide is a reset button. It can feel very good to die because she's lived many lives. She's experienced death. And so it was sort of this kind of like, I understand why you want to do it. It feels very good, but you shouldn't. But it's, you know, it really feels good. And it's like a fresh start. So it's like drawing in those kind of people. And then like, I mean, maybe for some, it works. Or just having that community of people who are also into the same thing, going through the same things as you. I think that can benefit people. But like I said, she's playing with fire. She's playing the role of therapist, but also this sort of omnipotent, all-knowing person that can access the Akashic records and knows more things than you do about yourself. So I guess like the solution, which isn't a great one, but there just should be some sort of regulation or more transparency with this process because she has no license. There's no board. There's nobody she has to answer to, but she's pretending she is sort of.
Right.
She's demanding that you believe that she is basically what I heard. And when any sort of inquiry or cross-examination or curation of a conversation that she wasn't curating, she got pretty ornery.
Yeah. And my final interview was like one of the first times that she's really had to question that sort of criticism and pushback. And I think you sort of see a side of her that you rarely see. And a lot of her followers did not appreciate that. You know, like, how dare this guy? And I understand how that can be uncomfortable.
Yeah. She was basically, in essence, saying, you need to believe my boast about myself.
I am because I am. So that was her attitude. Like, well, I am because I am. And that's it. It's like a parent saying, just do it. Do you think anyone's woken up because of the gateway, because of your podcast on her?
I've had people reach out and thank me and say, like, maybe they were having questions. You know, you hear this term, like, when the shelf broke.
Yes.
I know, yeah.
We talk about it a lot.
I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people, like, they had kind of things piling up, but if it's like, once they listened to the Gateway, it was like, oh, this all comes very clear.
Yeah.
My ex, the Gateway was an introduction for her to Teal Swan. And we're still friends, and she will now post Teal Swan Instagram posts and TikToks on her Instagram. And she's like, yeah, you were my gateway to Teal.
Oh, shit.
And she's like, yeah, she's definitely controversial. There are things I don't like. But, you know, she's like, when she's right, she's right.
Oh, so dangerous, though. All of these people that we're discovering, they're obviously is good stuff on the outside. Otherwise, why do you get in?
There's a lot of beautiful, wonderful teachings that they're pulling from. And then, like,
yes.
You know, and a lot of those teachings, like, were due for an update. So it's like they're giving an update and kind of just throwing in some Tealisms and like making it more accessible in the internet age. And that's good, you know, like, but also it's like maybe some proper credit to like the Eastern religions that you're pulling from.
I just would be really uncomfortable if there was a Sarah tribe, you know, like there's a certain personality that relishes that, you know, and that wants that. And I think that's where she derails. And I'm wondering, did she have any contact with you after Gateway came out, or did you talk to her? Was there a response, or do you know what she thought of it?
I don't think they listened to it. They were very upset because they said they had to cancel some events because of the controversy around it. I wrote some articles for Gizmodo for each episode, and they asked me to take down the articles.
Did you?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no reason. And they certainly didn't like the reaction. I don't think they listened to it. You know, I feel like it was pretty balanced, and I gave her and her followers some space to explain like what she brings to them. I reached out to them afterwards because somebody's interested in developing into a doc series. And at first they were like, why would you reach out to us? And I was like, okay, well, somebody wants to make a doc series about Teal. They're like, okay, we'll talk to them.
And they did.
Yeah, they did. And that's coming out mid-May on Hulu Freeform.
We just watched the trailer.
Okay, so this is my burning question. Like, if they know that every time that they've kind of had an expose on them, it hasn't gone to their liking, why invite more? Like, is it arrogance? Is it like people are going to see it? Or is it like, why would they bring that upon themselves? Like, I don't understand it.
I mean, maybe you'll know more than me. Maybe you can't talk about it. But I heard Heath is in the second season of The Vow.
Mm-hmm. We've heard that too.
I can explain that because Keith's back's against the wall. He was never going to willingly bring in a neutral party that he didn't know that he could curate how the filming was going to go and have a trustworthy team to do that. Now he's in a position where he's throwing Hail Marys and he's going to convince whoever he can convince, and that he didn't do the New York Times article, invite a reporter in until
the New York.
He had a tsunami of evidence mounted against him, and he had to enter an arena where he had to answer questions. And he lied. He lied from the get, every question he did. And I don't think Teal's in that situation. There's nothing legally going on, and there's nothing going on.
And she thinks she's doing right. Keith knows he didn't.
That's what I kind of have to think.
Yeah. It seemed like, you know, when she agreed to be filmed, she thought if people see for their own eyes, that's what I told her. I was like, look, you didn't like the podcast. It was told through my perspective. I tried to be as balanced and include as many voices, but people can only experience so much through that. Whereas you, like, if you see Teal, there's more to take from their own opinion from. Yeah, I think she sees it as a platform. That's why, you know, they agreed to participate in these things, is because it's a way of getting their message out. And again, she, I think, understands that it's not going to work for everybody. It's going to be controversial.
So it's a numbers game.
Yeah.
And also keep in mind, like, for the whole time that we were in NXIVM, there was articles written and nobody was allowed in. There was no access. And just to clarify what Nippy was saying, like, he could have, you know, the Times Union was in his backyard. He refused to give a statement. His whole thing was, when you wrestle with a pig, you both get dirty and the pig likes it. So basically his whole thing was, if I justify with a response, then what was there was a quote about that, right, Nip? Like, if I justify it.
If I stop to block every sling and arrow that's thrown at me, they now control me in my time.
Which has some truth to it. Yeah.
It does. It does. Yeah.
So he just like refused to engage.
But he made it a noble move to not do it.
He was a noble thing.
I've reached out to a lot of spiritual leaders and they don't engage. I've reached out to Bentinho. He's very closed off, more strategic around that. And then I've reached out to some. They just like immediately respond to my DM. Different people, you know, I think it's, you kind of hit them where they are in their career, if they're open to that.
Have you ever had any contact with other ex or current NXIVM members?
Yeah, I have a good friend who actually, you know, she ended up introducing me to others. But it's funny how we met. I didn't know this at the time. So we matched on Bumble. She had been out of NXIVM for 4 months or so.
Fresh.
Yeah, and had kind of moved out and was starting this new life. And I think it was when the news hit, Keith had been arrested and it was just all over the news. And she was like, oh my God, I just need to like meet a random dude in Brooklyn. And we matched. She's like, I just need to meet somebody who has like nothing to do with cults.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't know this world. And we matched and we met up. It was like a drink in. She said, what do you report on? Like, what were you doing in Costa Rica? I was like, well, it's kind of weird. I I was reporting on this sort of spiritual guru. She's a little controversial. People call her a cult leader. She's like, oh my God, what are the fucking chances?
She can't
chances?
Escape.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And she was like, all right, this guy's either going to understand or he's going to exploit my story. And fortunately, I was, you know, human about it. And we talked about it. And I think for her, it was good to have a friend who understood. And for me, for sure. I mean, it's been very informative of my reporting.
What did you learn?
I was finishing up the Gateway. After that, the Gateway, which is the podcast about Teal Swan. Mm-hmm. After that, I started reporting on the Fellowship of Friends. And for that one, I spoke to about 100 people. I spent 3 years on the compound getting to know them a week or two here and there throughout that 3-year period and interviewed a lot of survivors. And with that one, there's just a lot more, maybe hundreds of young men have been sexually exploited and possibly trafficked over. I mean, it's been around for 50 years. And I spoke to a lot of abuse survivors that told me their stories. With that, just the way that I had to present it, you know, it's like you're making this product that is for consumption. I mean, on some level, it has to be engaging and almost entertaining, but it is about people's trauma. You know, people are trusting you with their story and a lot of times to protect their anonymity. I guess just with the editing of that, just being sensitive to that. And there were some things I was like, hey, if this was you telling your story, like, how would you appreciate if like you heard this? And like, is the music here? Does it feel too dramatic? My biggest fear is making like a work of trauma porn, you know, like exploiting people's stories who like, totally. You know, like they trust you and then re-traumatizing a survivor. They give you their trust. So I think there were so many times where Becca was sort of the voice on my shoulder as I was editing or interviewing, like what would she think if she heard this and would she be disappointed? That's been hugely impactful. Yeah.
That's invaluable.
Well, good for you. Good for you for even wanting to do that. Sarah and I got lucky
with the bow.
Yeah.
And I wish that Becca had been on the shoulder of the people who made Bad Vegan with Sarma, because they did the opposite of what you just said, in my humble opinion. I know you haven't finished it yet, but if you do, I think you'll know what I mean. It's just like she's not only still in trauma whilst being interviewed, but they didn't do her right.
And also, I don't think they knew what they were looking at.
But that's the thing that I disagree with, is that they did, because they interviewed a cult expert and they didn't use it. Either they didn't know what they were looking at or...
They did and they chose to be insensitive to it.
Yeah, I only watched the first episode because it's like there's so many of those and I'll watch them and I'm like, I already know I'm going to get mad if I finish.
Yeah, I know. I know.
But I told you, listening to...
I sure was mad.
y'all's interview with the survivors of Ventino, I really appreciated and respected how you were very hyper aware of this. They are processing their trauma, giving them the space and the time to talk about that. And Sarah, I think you said it was kind of like therapy and you're like, I can only do so many of these types of interviews, but it's a lot. And it's like, so many times where survivors will tell me like, it's the first time they've really told the story in a full time, you know, they're like, sometimes I wrote about it or processed it. Cause I did, you know, I do a lot of everything I could to kind of fact check and look through like the first time they wrote a letter about it or a diary or an entry, fact check their allegations because they're very serious. It's the first time they've kind of told their story in one cohesive way. And they're like, wow, this is like therapy. And I'm like, no, I'm not a therapist. Like you absolutely should get a therapist, but I am just trying to help you tell your story. Just reminding them of that goes a long way, I think.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that. At the same time, one of the big things I've learned in cult recovery or any kind of course of control, abuse, narcissistic, all that stuff is one of the main things. Well, at least certainly for me, has been talking about it, especially in a lot of these groups where you're silenced and you lose your voice and you lose your free will. Just to even speak and say this happened is a huge cathartic release.
Yeah.
Just part of the whole I got out community and, you know, people writing their stories, sharing their stories, blowing the lid off the shame and all that.
Yeah. I'm sure you get this a lot, but people who will message me, they'll tell me their story. And I'm like, I don't know if I can do anything, if I can report out this story or just there's certain issues, but they're just like, I just needed to tell somebody and they know that you know it and you're going to hear them and believe.
Yeah.
They're not going to feel shamed for how could you get pulled into this? Because I genuinely believe anybody can get pulled into a cult-like group, abusive or spiritually abusive situation. So I think for some, it's just telling somebody who's in that world and, you know, covers it like you or me.
I think we found that with all the experts we've interviewed and survivors, but also people like yourself. You had a story, you had your own experience with things lining up, right? That there's this understanding of, yes, it could happen to anybody. And until then, you're susceptible.
And a template, so to speak, of what to be sensitive to. And I think a lot of what allows these people in these positions to thrive, the gurus or whatever, is they know when someone leaves, they're generally not in any position to share their story in a way that's concise, believable, and they do sound a little bit crazy. And then people think, oh, I would never fall for that or whatever. So it humanizes it.
I mean, with a lot of the men who I spoke to who were in the Fellowship of Friends, because the leader, for one thing, he was very homophobic. For years, didn't allow gay relationships, but he was, according to a lot of the men I spoke to, he was sexually abusing these young men, and he was only interested in straight ones. I heard from a lot of gay men who were like, yeah, you know, interest in me. But he would groom the men and get them alone, and then he'd reveal to them that he's a goddess in a man's body, and they couldn't deny the goddess, or they might be doomed to dying and going to hell. And so these men who had this experience, you know, especially years later, they're like, I couldn't tell anybody about it. Especially with male sex abuse, there's just a different kind of stigma and shame, you know, especially, mm-hmm. you know, I think it was, I don't know if it was by design or what, but like with all these straight men, especially, they just didn't want to speak about that. And so I think that's part of the reason he's sort of been able to get away with it, with maybe like, you know, been like possibly hundreds of people he could have exploited and abused. And, you know, they're telling me that it's only now through like the coverage of the Me Too movement and NXIVM and Larry Nassar, they're like, they finally had the sort of psychological vocabulary to explain these things. They're like, well, at the time I didn't think it was rape because he didn't have a gun to my head. But now I realize like he made me believe he controlled if I lived or died or what happened to my very mortal soul. So like, it was like this ultimate gun. So I couldn't, you know, they understand like the power dynamics there. It's heartbreaking, but it's definitely hopeful and inspiring to see these men finally understand.
Hey, culty listeners, lovers of cult busting content, ALB Sears, culty kids. We've gotten a lot of requests to put up a link where people can throw some funds up behind the podcast and help support what Little Bit Culty is doing. And you know what? That's a great idea. Thank you for that. And as we've gotten to know other podcasters and learn more about this whole podcast thing, we've been learning that it takes a whole lot of different resources and different sources of revenue and listener support to keep it rolling. Sponsorships and ads and the occasional appeal to amazeballs listeners like you. That's why we added a way for anyone who wants to support the show to do exactly that. You can go to alittlebitculty.com/support or the link in our Instagram bio, or smash that link in our show notes to make a one-time contribution or a recurring one. We will pay your support forward with a galactic level of love and light and healing resources, of course. Again, it's alittlebitculty.com/support or check out the link in our Instagram bios. Next up, we really got to figure out what to call you, our listenership. ALBC Nation? Flying Monkeys? We're going to have to workshop that. Thanks, guys. I'd like to, if we can tease our audience with a couple sound bites about Fellowship of Friends. And also, in the interim, they have this week to binge the podcast, which is on Spotify, called Revelations, right? Yes. Like, we're binging it. You can too, my dear listeners.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about it so that they're intrigued.
I started reporting on it in 2018, the Fellowship of Friends. I first heard about it from Teal's then husband, her ex. He, I believe, bought the spiritual retreat center, and then he kind of seems like he like left his family behind and joined the Teal tribe, and they married her, bought her this retreat center, and then they kind of seem like she kind of divorced him, and he went off and started his own spiritual group, changed his name. But anyway, he told me that, you know, his spiritual journey began when he was in this group called the Fellowship of Friends, and he's written about it online, and I looked into it, and it sounded just stranger than fiction. I mean, it's this sort of monastery of refinement out in California. They have this vineyard. They collect Renaissance art. One of the things is, in order to achieve like higher consciousness, it helps you to surround yourself with all the finest things in life, which are very like objective to, you know, what the leader likes. So it's like Renaissance art, fine wine. They have 44 angels that oversee them. It's Shakespeare, Rembrandt, Da Vinci, Bach. And so I heard this, and I was like, this sounds like truly stranger than fiction. I need to check it out. I found out they had like a doomsday coming up because the leader gets these omens from the end. He's the only one who can talk to the 44 angels, and he's going to be an angel himself when he dies. He gets these messages for like when the world's going to end. And so I was like, I want to get out there because how often am I going to like observe a spiritual group, you know, as they prepare for the doomsday? You know, I showed up, they invited me like to start with like a wine tour because they have this vineyard. They were like pioneers of the natural wine movement. You know, they welcomed me to a wine tour, and then they looked into me. They're like, we're not so sure.
Wait, in the article that was in SF Gate, the exact words that they used, and I'm just wondering if you caught this, they said that they were the vanguard of the natural wine movement, which I thought was an interesting choice. You said pioneer.
So their winemaker, who's now left, he was seen as sort of vanguard of the natural wine movement because they were like, no pesticide. You know, this was a time when like winery was becoming very industrialized. This was like sacred land and a sacred wine. So they just stripped all that out. But I was trying to describe him, and I think, I don't know if I used vanguard or pioneer in the podcast. I don't know if he was trying to signal. I mean, obviously, yeah, what you're getting at is like, that's what Keith called himself. First, they were like, no. And then, well, they were like, yes, then no. And then I came back to them. I was like, I'm really just trying to, again, at the time, I was like, I just want to see this world. It sounds unreal. And so I went for the doomsday. And, you know, they had this like final black tie dinner. Everybody's supposed to die except for them. And they're going to kind of build this new world based on their beliefs. And Robert, the leader, will be kind of this new world leader. And they're pulling from all the teachings of all the angels and all that. And I just wanted to see it. And it was like, it was fascinating. I mean, the wine was incredible. Everybody was like dressed in these like tuxes and gowns. And there's this like gala. And of course, the world didn't end. And that's the whole thing we can get into more. But as I was there, I started talking to more people and started hearing about the sex rituals. And I was like, I think there's more here. So I kind of kept coming back and ended up speaking to more and more survivors. This leader, he has this pattern for like 50 years of exploiting young straight men. And then now it's kind of gotten just a whole other level. I mean, I interviewed men who said they participate in these, like the leader, Robert, would try to have sex with 100 men in one day. Ugh. And these men would say they were just like waiting to go in the bedroom. It was like, they described it like a line for the DMV. And he was just doing sometimes like five at a time. And, but yeah, these were all men who like, they were sort of groomed into it. So just to give you a sense of the scale. So that's when I was like, yeah, this is, I mean, we spent, again, it was 3 years. I had to make sure the reporting was airtight. We got a fact checker, lawyer.
And is he still alive, Richard?
Yep. He's still alive and still seems.
How old is he?
He's like 81 or two.
We interviewed Spencer Schneider, Manhattan Cult Story. And the teachings of what he called the work at the center with the group were all from the fourth way, from Gurdjieff.
Yeah, that's the teachings that the fellowship is based on. But there's even a stronger connection. So that cult that he wrote about in the book was Sharon Gans was the leader.
Yes.
And she was an actress who was in Slaughterhouse Five.
Yes.
And she kind of built this. It's again, it seems like a very Eyes Wide Shut. It's like Manhattan elite.
Yes.
So she got into that when she started a cult with her then husband, Alex Horn, in California, called the Theater of All Possibilities.
Right.
He was an actor and it was kind of this fourth way, like theater performance stuff. And Robert Burton, the leader of the fellowship, was in that cult with Alex Horn and Sharon Gans as the leader.
Okay.
And that's sort of his origin story that we get into in the later episodes where he was abused by Alex Horn. Alex was like, he would make people beat the gay out of each other and he would just smack people all the time and like allegedly made one man have sex with his own daughter.
Ugh.
I mean, he was just very horrifically abusive. And that's how Robert, his introduction to the fourth way. And then he was apparently kicked out for having relations with another man. Then he got in a car wreck, hit his head, started speaking to the angels. And then he decided to start his own fourth way group.
Right.
So there's this sort of cycle of abuse that goes on, you know, I mean, and it's like there were many men who left the fellowship to start their own cult-like groups. Something I wasn't really expecting, you know, with the podcast, I interviewed a lot of the men who Robert allegedly abused. I kind of thought, you know, 3 years I got to the core of this rotten onion. And then children who were raised in the fellowship started reaching out. And they said that those men, because then they were the inner circle and they had power, they then abused these children.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you start to see this cycle continues. People who are spiritually abused can, yeah, continue that pattern.
We saw that also in the Osho podcast that we did with the leaders who then started. It was made okay by the inner circle, and then so the outer inner circle start doing it to the
right.
To the kids. Ugh, probably going to do more on that later, but this episode will have some space between now and Spencer Schneider's book. And I said this to Spencer in our interview as well. I was like certain that Keith had been invited to something or done some classes in the early 80s, maybe taken notes. And even with the recruitment process, it was very similar, but also with the parties. They loved these lavish, elaborate, fancy, very extravagant parties.
You have to keep it fun.
Yeah, but it wasn't fun. It was weird.
Well, that was their version of fun in an abusive
version.
Regime.
They in had Albany.
Nazis threw parties too, right?
It's true. I mean, we threw parties here in Vancouver. I'm just saying the lavishness was something that ours weren't lavish. They were just fun parties.
Yeah. But I think it makes it feel more like a secret society, like something you really want to be in. Like we are elite.
Yeah.
And nobody else lives like this.
Mm.
Totally. So we're going to recommend Fellowship of Friends podcast called Revelations on Spotify for next week's episode. And we'll deep dive on that. But to wrap, a couple questions I had just about your process. Now that you are known as an investigative journalist that exposes these types of things, do you think that'll impact your ability to expose other cults or make it easier?
I don't know. You know, I don't really think about that at the moment. I'm just trying to tell a story. And again,
right.
I went into the fellowship thinking it was a totally different story. And it was just kind of went where the story took me. And same with Teal. Like I said, I don't go in trying to expose something. I go in trying to understand it and share that story with people. So I hope people understand that I'm not a total snake who's, you know, I have to expose them. Like, sorry if you can't handle that sort of scrutiny. I have gotten many tips. I get a lot of tips that I wouldn't have if I didn't have this kind of platform. But yeah, I think my reporting style might have to evolve. It's definitely something I think about.
With the tips that you're getting, is there any other groups that should be on people's radar now that you're seeing more and more of this getting brought to light?
Yeah, we are in the new golden age of cults, I think.
Yes.
And spiritual abuse, but it's happening in so many different ways. Yeah, there are a lot. I mean, there are some I'm reporting on that I can't really talk about.
Darn it.
I'll say something like kind of I have my eye on is in Austin. I grew up in Texas, spent a lot of time in Austin. It's obviously like Austin's just kind of evolving so quickly. But there's a lot of that kind of conspirituality movement going there. A lot of like people who were in California, you know, got too expensive. So they're moving to Austin and they have less restriction. It kind of reminds me how like there's a lot of spiritual groups and gurus who go to Costa Rica because it's like both safe. It's safe enough that you can like walk around, you know, with like beads and barefoot and naked and like not get shot, but it's like pretty unregulated and you kind of get away with ayahuasca ceremonies and all that. I think Austin kind of has that sweet spot. It doesn't have like the kind of at least under COVID, it didn't have a lot of the restrictions and like the tax stuff and all that it's California had, but you know, it's very welcoming to kind of libertarian thinking, free thinking. There just seems to be a hotbed of like a lot of sort of these very powerful, influential gurus who are moving out there in that kind of conspirituality space. And I've been hearing rumors and stuff of things going on down there.
That makes sense.
It also just like a lot of like kind of online groups that I'm actively sort of monitoring to see if how they're evolving.
To me, yeah, that's where I think the regulations should be put in, and who knows how to do it. I have no idea. But we've heard consistently the cult of the algorithm is the influential one.
With Thiel, it was, you know, YouTube, she really flourished there. People didn't have to seek her out and she didn't have to seek out people. It was like YouTube was like delivering the most vulnerable, alone people right to her. And then TikTok.
Do they have responsibility in this? Like, how does that algorithm play into the cult recruitment and like
private company?
I was a tech reporter at Gizmodo for years, reporting all kind of like YouTube, cybersecurity stuff, Facebook. I learned that they always take action when a journalist reaches out and asks for their take because it's just like just safer just to kill it. They shut down the Thiel tribe when I think BBC did a report that came out after the Gateway. I was reporting on those things and seeing how they were like radicalizing terrorist and stuff. I mean, Thiel Swan, I don't think is the big concern for them or like a concern for me. I think Facebook and Google are amplifying so much sort of toxic, terrible stuff and radicalizing people that can't even begin to like try to nip that in the bud. What chaps your ass about journalists who report on this on this stuff?
It's pretty simple when they want trauma porn and they're not seeking to understand it.
Yeah. If you ever finish watching Bad Vegan, at the end, it's sort of left as a, almost like a twist, like maybe she was part of the con.
Mm.
And like, as somebody who's known her now, not in real life, but like as friends on the internet since The Vow came out and having a deep empathy for her and her story and how she was clearly, in my mind, conned by a sociopathic narcissist.
Yeah.
It's just so irresponsible to even insinuate that.
I see that a lot. I was just reporting for years, just like writing articles, and you don't need like a clean ending. I mean, maybe a good kicker, but with a lot of these documentaries and podcasts, there's a real push for like, yeah, but how does it end? Like, what's the revelation or something? And so I think there's a big push that they have to like pull that. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, it seems like that's an issue with like a lot of abuse survivors, spiritual abuse, domestic abuse is like, yeah, maybe they're sort of complicit in the crime, but that's a part of them being preyed on and manipulated and sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like it kind of built us up. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, yeah, well, maybe, you know, I don't know. I don't know how it ends, but it seems like they got kind of messy with that.
Yeah, they did. Well, I know this from talking to her is that they got her in the filming of it to get on the phone and have conversations with him to record it to show how, you know, the crazy shit that he says to her and how he speaks with her. And in that, she was playing a role. She was acting for the camera. It wasn't fly on the wall, lightning in the bottle, real. It was contrived for the purpose of, you know, showing his personality. And they used one of those conversations at the end. And people who watched it, and even people who know us and know our story and listen to our podcast were like, what? But she was laughing with him. That's how they cut it. And it's so awful for me knowing the whole story. That's like that they would leave that doubt in people's minds. It's just like...
Well, also... It does two things. It empowers the abuser and it takes Sarma's trust and abuses it again to support their story and then says that she was complicit with the person who was abusing him. So she got kind of abused twice from my perspective.
That's definitely an ass chapping.
That's an ass chapping for you.
How about with you? What's your ass chapping?
So what chaps my ass about Thiel, or maybe I'll say what grinds my gears about Thiel? You know, there's a lot of focus on the suicide aspect of it. And I think that kind of a lot of attention goes on that. That's its own issue that I looked into into the podcast, The Gateway. But as I got deeper into it, I got more concerned about the memory stuff and how she's influencing people's memory. And that's where it got really concerning for me. I mean, we know about this with how police, they get people to say things and maybe even believe things that didn't happen, you know, and this happens a lot in therapy and especially with a spiritual healer relationship where Teal has a lot of influence over somebody and convinces them these things happen. And that can completely warp somebody's own perspective of who they are, their relationship with their family. The way she influences memory was really the most concerning thing for me.
I do encourage people to watch the documentary, which is called...
The Deep End.
The Deep End. I love the name.
Yeah.
Going off the deep end.
Yeah, something she says a lot. You know, you have to be with me, you really have to go into the deep end of the pool.
Well...
And that's where you drown.
There's such a double meaning to that, though.
So I think maybe that's what they're going for. I don't know. I can't say.
Amazing. Well, thank you, Jennings, for your time.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for everything that y'all do.
Imagine yourself walking into a forest. You can see the path and the trees. High above you, the air is crisp. You are walking towards your happy place. Allegedly, say it with me. Anything said here on this podcast about alleged cults, alleged MLM schemes, alleged douchebaggery, mindfuckery, criminality, spiritual fraud, or the like, is offered purely as commentary. Because the views and opinions expressed on A Little Bit Culty do not necessarily reflect on official policy or position of the podcast. And any content provided by our guests, bloggers, sponsors, or authors are their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, group, club, organization, business individual, anyone, or anything. So just let these words drift into your mind without needing to focus on any of them. You are great. You are capable. You deserve to be happy. Nobody's mad at you, unless you're actually a narcissistic, culty criminal. If that's you, cut that shit out. Don't be a fuckwad. But if that's not you, again, you are great. You are capable. You deserve to be happy. A Little Bit Culty loves you. I think it's really interesting. This is the first time we've talked to an investigative journalist on a subject. And I want to point out that there was a time when we had been in touch with one of the survivors of Teal Swan's inner circle. He's actually featured in the doc that we mentioned, The Deep End. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't ready to talk. And I think that's often the case, you know, with people when they first get out. It was recommended to us. Don't process your trauma.
It's the case with people now.
Yeah.
In our situation. And with Nexium, they don't want to talk about it.
Don't process your trauma on film, or in this case, on audio. And I said, listen, you take your time. And you've seen that in a couple of our episodes where people are still in trauma. For us, it was helpful in the end, I think, to talk about it. But I'm glad that we had access to Jennings. And as we said in the intro, we will talk more to the director and the producer of The Deep End and learn more about Teal. So I think that like her word salad is ripe and rich throughout all her videos. You found a special one. Can we hear it?
Yes, you can. This time-space reality that you call life on Earth is a consensus reality. What that means is that it is a co-creative experience. Even though many guides will tell you that you create your own reality because it is empowering and important to realize your power as a creator of your experience, you did not actually come here to create your own reality, made for one. In a consensus reality, the mastery of relationships so as to reach a chosen state of oneness is really the ultimate goal, because that is really the only way to co-create something pleasing to all individual creators participating in such a construct.
Does your head hurt?
So
what's the goal?
In my left eye just went a little bit. Okay, I got it back.
I wish you could see what's happening to Nippy's face right now. He's super contorted.
Like, we could go through that, but I just don't.
We could break it down. I just don't feel like it's a good idea for anybody.
I'll let you guys rewind that and hopefully laugh.
So check out The Gateway, Jennings Pod, and check out The Deep End. And we'll see you next week for part two with our new friend, Jennings Brown. Sinking down to the depths of the ocean.
Let's keep the conversation going. We'll be back soon with more episodes of A Little Bit Culty with more experts and survivors. And sometimes experts who are survivors, as well as some familiar faces from The Vow from HBO. If you've got suggestions or questions on upcoming topics, find us on Instagram at A Little Bit Culty.
And for more background on what brought me here, my memoir, Scarred, The True Story of How I Escaped Nexium, the Cult That Bound My Life, is available on Amazon, Audible, and where most books are sold.
If you'd like to help us spread the word about A Little Bit Culty podcast, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe.
Seriously, like, take out their phone and tell them to press subscribe. It takes a second. We're also available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app. And if you're listening on a smartphone, tap or swipe over the cover art of this podcast to find show notes and helpful resources.
You might also find some offers from our sponsors there. And when you support our sponsors, you help us keep this podcast going. Just don't be a little bit culty about it.
A Little Bit Culty is executive produced by me, your co-host, Sarah Edmondson, and Anthony Nippy Ames.
That's me.
Associate producer is Jess Tardy. Produced, edited, mixed, and mastered by Citizens of Sound. Our amazing theme song, Cultivated, is by John Bryant and co-written by Nigel Asselin. I'm Sarah Edmondson, and thanks for listening to A Little Bit Culty.